This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to our Thanksgiving Day program. We want to wish you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving. This program has been pre-recorded. Please do not call in. Our guest today is Lansing State Journal reporter Chris Solari and WILX-TV reporter Jeremy Sampson. We'll discuss the Michigan State basketball team this season, and we'll also discuss the Spartan football team. What's wrong with the Michigan State football team?
Hey, Chris, I don't think you can pinpoint, you know, one thing that's really gone wrong in this football season. The defense has been as good as advertised, breaking it down position by position, but the offense has just not come along and hasn't made a lot of those big plays like they did last year. And when you have a good defense and an offense that doesn't produce as much, you're going to be in a lot of close games. And they've won some, and they haven't.
That's amazing, because you really do see just how much one little thing can take the entire puzzle out of place. One little piece out of place, whether it's a linebacker missing an assignment or not getting pressure up the middle on defense or dropping passes, maybe one pass here, one pass there. Benny Fowler's pass against Notre Dame in the end zone comes to mind as one of the bigger ones of the season that kind of told the tale of what was to come. I think that you've seen a lot of that this year. I think you've seen some youth, you've seen some veteran players get injured. It really has been a myriad of things that has contributed to what Michigan State football team has suffered this year and really endured, because, we're still talking about 2-point games, 1-point yep. games, 4-point games. This is a team that's been close, been right there on the precipice of something special, but hasn't quite finished, I guess is the way to put it.
The thing that's most puzzling for me, Earl, is you look at the close games and they've won 3 close games and lost 4 close games, and you wonder why they're my favorite phrase in sports. They're consistently inconsistent. and that's it's just mind-boggling how a team one week can make a play in the fourth quarter when you need to win a game, mm-hmm. and the next week they can't. And it hasn't been all the offense. It hasn't been all the defense. It's been a combination of both. And it just, I'm sure as a coaching staff, Mark D'Antonio and the assistants just have to be scratching their head as saying, why one week can we do it and the next week we can't?
Yes, that's the question. And I guess I also want to ask you, how much do they miss Darrell Worthy? I mean, he gave him that push up the middle, but without any push up the middle, I mean, yes, the defense has been good, been pretty consistent, but it really seems like they really miss him.
They really do, and you thought maybe that Anthony Rashad White and maybe, some of these other guys that they had in the middle would be able to at least replicate some of what Jarrell Worthy did, but I think what you've seen is that anticipation of the snap count that Jarrell Worthy had was so critical, because he was in the backfield as the quarterback was getting out of the snap, and that disrupted so many different teams and offenses. I think you did see that some against Michigan and Denard Robinson. They were able to get him going backward rather than horizontally across the line, which was probably one of their better defensive efforts of the year. They held a really potent Michigan offense to 4 field goals, but it hasn't been consistent. Again, that inconsistency up front has really, again, trickles down back into the secondary, back into the linebackers.
Well, you're going to miss a guy who should have been a first-round draft pick. That's going to happen. What to me has stuck out more than anything else is the fact that offensively you lost 3 guys who had a chance to take it to the house every time they touched the ball. And that's what this team has not been able to replace. Last year's team with Cunningham, Martin, and Baker had 3 guys who you knew could score anytime they touched the ball. There's no one on this year's team. Now, Le'Veon Bell is a tremendous running back, but he's not a speedster. He's going to pound you and pound you and pound you and wear you down and maybe break off a long run in the fourth quarter, but he's not going to go for 80 yards at a time. That's not going to happen. The receivers have been, again, inconsistent, better later in the season than earlier, but there just aren't the playmakers on offense to score like they saw last year.
Yeah, Edwin Baker's a guy especially that I think people have kind of lost in the shuffle because he hasn't really hit the roster. I think he's on San Diego's practice squad. But he's a guy that was not only able to give you that home run threat, but he was a great edge runner, which is something that they don't have a compliment with Le'Veon Bell for. I mean, they're trying to run Le'Veon Bell and they have all year, running him around the edge. And that's just not his style. He's a between the tackles guy that, that punishes, you know, offensive or defensive linemen and linebackers.
And hurdles you if you get
and
too close.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't know, but I think that there might be a spot on the track team for him come this spring. But I think that Edwin Baker, that ability, they've sorely missed it. They tried to find it with Larry Caper a little bit. They've tried to find it with Nick Hill. You see them using a lot of jet sweeps with some of the receivers like Keith Mumphrey and Benny Fowler. And it just hasn't been there. And it's allowed defenses to force them inside and really say and challenge them to stack the box and say, come on, you know, let's see if you can run against a nine-man front or throw against it.
Well, one thing I think that all successful college football teams have is an abundance of speed. And while this team has a lot of talented guys, there's nobody really with a lot of speed. And, you know, the old saying of speed kills in football, it does. But there's nobody on this Michigan State roster right now that we've really seen run by guys, you know, whether it be a running back taking a handoff and you know, getting into the secondary and outrunning the defensive backs, or a receiver running by defensive backs and a quarterback who's able to hit them. And I think that's something that the coaching staff is going to really need to take a look at here over the next couple of years, is recruiting guys who have a lot of speed.
Yes, that's for sure. There's one thing I guess I'm a little bit disappointed in is that Johnny Adams and Darquez Denard, you know, I thought they would be better, but, you know, if you don't get a push up the middle, those guys, we see the other teams are sort of taking them apart from time to time. It doesn't happen consistently, but I thought they would just be better at coverage.
Yeah, and I think that maybe we're talking about this a little differently if that Denard interception return against Nebraska does stand as a touchdown, or if you don't get that pass interference call, we're hailing him as an absolute hero right now. Obviously, circumstances worked against Michigan State in that favor, but I'd kind of agree with you on that. But I think we've seen that the teams have actually, even for the last 2 years before this season, they were going at Johnny Adams pretty hard. And that's part of the business of being a number one cornerback and being a top-level guy. But you're right. I think that we expected them to maybe have like 15 picks, and maybe it's all on us. Maybe we had a little unrealistic expectations, but again, that trickled down by not getting the push up front does affect that.
Well, I'm wondering if I know Spartan fans are for the most part disappointed with this season. I'm just wondering how much, you know, the expectations that we heaped on them before the season, or maybe even some of the fans' expectations coming off two straight 11-win seasons, just thinking, well, that's going to happen every year kind of thing. And I just think it goes to show how difficult it is to do that, not only 1 year, but to then do it two straight years. And I think it's, you know, a little bit unreal. We're still talking about Michigan State here. We're not talking about, you know, USC or Florida or Alabama, or, you know, pick one of your college football powerhouses, Ohio State. This program is so much better off than it was when Mark D'Antonio got here. Don't get me wrong. But this is not an elite program in the country where I think double-digit wins should be expected each year.
Regenerating that talent is something that does take time. There's no question about that. And I think that we look back into the preseason. Mark D'Antonio did say, he said, it's very difficult for a team to repeat a 10-win season. He reiterated that a number of times. And to think that they did it once, you know, obviously the odds go down that they do it a second time after that. There are very few teams that can do that, especially when you do lose players like the players that Michigan State lost.
And that's the thing, to winning two 11 seasons, 11-game winning seasons back-to-back, you know, that it had never happened before. I mean, this is the first time in Michigan State history. But I think, like you said, Chris and Jeremy, but I think the fans got a little spoiled behind those two. And even if they didn't think they would 11 games again, I think they thought they were going to have a very good and strong winning season again.
Well, and that, you know, still may very well happen. And, you know, depending on what happens here the last couple weeks of the regular season and into a bowl game, perhaps. What, you know, despite the fans' expectations, I know the coaches and the players had high expectations for this year. And I know most of them are very disappointed about the way that this season has transpired. I just think that it goes to show that it's not easy to get this done. And, you know, I think sometimes stopping and smelling the roses a little bit, no pun intended, is not a bad thing for a program or a fan base to just sit and look and say, you know, we've accomplished something special here. Even though we haven't made our ultimate goal of getting to the Rose Bowl, it was still a pretty good two-year run.
It's amazing. You sit back and you actually sometimes think, or at least I do, I wonder how those great Biggie and Duffy teams of the 50s and 60s would fare in today's climate when you're playing 11, 12, 13, sometimes 14 games in a season, because that does take a toll on you. It mm-hmm. takes a lot out of you, and it really challenges programs in terms of depth, especially with injuries. You saw that on Michigan State's offensive line this year.
Sure.
Over the years, that there's been a number of years, and that's something that no one really talks about with the group the past two seasons. They did not have many significant injuries and many long-term injuries.
I think they're paying for it this year.
They really are.
I mean,
they really are. They've been bit by the injury bug so badly in such a key area on the offensive line when you're trying to be a run-oriented team or at least a balanced team, that it's really struggled to gel, because you need those game-in, game-out experience of knowing where the guy's going to cut, you know, where he's going to throw a block, and it's just not been there. It just hasn't been for a consistent level, and that's where the inconsistency starts, I think.
Well, going on, I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on next season? Because I see next season as being a real key, because if you look at what Ohio State's done this season, you know, they all of a sudden next year become eligible for the Big Ten championship game. You know they're going to be somebody in the leaders division that's going to need to be reckoned with. The Michigan program is certainly on the rise with Brady Hoke and how strong they've been now over the past 2 years. Where does Michigan State kind of fit into that puzzle? And I think that 2013 is going to be a really big season for Michigan State. I'm not totally discarding this season and what MSU still has left, but you know, looking ahead, where are you going to go? Are you going to get back to that level of 10, 11 wins a season, or are you going to stick around the 6-7 range? And I think next year the schedule sets up well enough for Michigan State to approach a double-digit win season again next year.
We've seen it in recruiting, I think, over the past few years, how much it's made an impact. And I think there's going to be the talent level there to do that, to have those 10, 11 win seasons. Even a 9-win season would be a strong mm-hmm. rebound from this season. I think that, as you said, with Ohio State and Michigan starting to come around, even Penn State, with their numbers down and having a successful time under Tom O'Brien, there's a number of teams in the Big Ten that are having success, and maybe not equal to what Michigan State had the past 2 years, but right there, and that have the name brand that Michigan State doesn't have. And as long as they can keep the eyes of recruits and keep that talent level regenerating, I think they can continue to build on that and continue to move forward into what Mark D'Antonio wants to be, essentially what Tom Izzo built in the basketball program, a perennial contender for those titles.
Yes, and that sort of leads me to my next question, was going to be, like you said already, Ohio State, Michigan, they're tough. And then you throw in Brian Kelly and what Notre Dame has done. Those are their three tough guys, teams that they've got to recruit against in those three. Do they win many more recruiting battles coming up years against Ohio State, Michigan, and Notre Dame? They've got a tough road to hoe as far as recruiting.
Yeah, at this point, it doesn't look likely. I mean, Michigan State is still going to get their fair share of players. And what this coaching staff really needs to be given credit for is not always getting the 4- and 5-star guys and just plugging them into their positions. It's going out and finding those 3-star recruits and turning them into 4- and 5-star players. And that's been the staple of this program to get them to 11 win seasons. And I don't see that philosophy changing.
I don't either. And especially when you're trying to move guys around to where they're going to best fit your team. You know, a guy like Lawrence Thomas, he started the season at defensive lineman, a natural linebacker, moved to fullback,
right,
played some tight end this year. They want to get the best guys on the field. And I think kids today, that's the one thing that they really want to see, is that, are you going to use me? How are you going to use me? And how quickly are you going to use me? And if they're not afraid to play these guys, these redshirt freshmen, some true freshmen like McGarrett Kings and Aaron Burbridge coming in and making an impact right away, I think that definitely bodes well in the recruiting realm, because kids want immediate playing time. And if you're good enough to play and they put you out there, other kids behind them will see that and say, ah, well, I can come there and do that. Or there's a position in need with maybe a safety like Trenton Robinson last year leaving, and a guy like Demetrius Cox who didn't play this year because of the depth that has been built by D'Antonio's staff at safety. But he's going to be a future player. There's no question.
Well, and I think that's where a lot of these players have to be patient as well, because as Mark D'Antonio's really built this program, he's built it using two or three true freshmen every year, but then being able to redshirt the rest of the class. And that's just allowed them another year of development. And I really think, as Chris mentioned, the depth earlier really helped in many of the positions in providing that depth in case anybody did go down. I think it also provides a little bit more competition. So I think guys come in knowing that they're going to have the opportunity, and I think that's all you can ask for. But realistically, I think they have to look at this program as a freshman coming in saying, look, there's only going to be, you know, two or three of us who are going to get significant playing time. Well, the rest of us are going to redshirt, and then we're going to mature, you know, mentally, physically. And then when we come in our redshirt freshman year, now we're really going to be all set to push the pedal to the metal.
Now, how much do you think, guys, that it will hurt if more guys leave? I mean, there's already rumors about Deion Sims may leave, Le'Veon Bell may leave. If these guys leave, and you know, so how much will that hurt Michigan State's program if these guys leave to go to the NFL? Because they might be NFL ready.
Well, short-term goals and long-term goals both get affected with that. I mean, you're talking at least four guys with Deion Sims, as you mentioned, Le'Veon Bell, Will Golston, and I think Darquez Denard might even be in that group as well with how he's performed at times this year. You're talking about some key areas, a starting tailback, a starting defensive end, a starting cornerback, a starting tight end. Deion, and it's interesting to think this because he's been such an integral part of this team this year, but Deion Sims might be the least of the concerns at that position because there's so much depth,
sure,
you know, younger guys, yep, behind him and that. But it would affect them in the short term getting that 9-10 win season next year, which again goes right into those long term goals of wanting to show that you're sustaining a successful program.
Well, I think there's no question. You know, Chris mentioned losing Edwin Baker, and you know, was that the right decision for him to leave last year? He certainly thought he was ready to play in the NFL. Hasn't worked out that way so far. He's not the first young man to make a decision to go to the NFL, and it hasn't worked out. It doesn't mean it's not going to work out for him. It just hasn't worked out this year. Of the four guys that Chris mentioned, you know, I see Sims being able to make an impact at the next level. I mean, a tight end with his kind of size and speed and hands can really make a difference in a football game. Denard, to me, is a very good player, but is not ready for the next level. Bell has opened some eyes with some fantastic runs. And the thing that's impressed me most about him is his durability. For somebody to tote the pigskin as many times as he has had this year, and to not, I mean, I'm sure he's dealing with some minor injuries, but to really not miss any significant time has got to show NFL people how tough this guy is. And we all know that the longevity of an NFL running back is not very long.
Especially one with a lot of miles in college.
He does. And he has had a lot of miles on his tires for sure. Who am I missing? Who's the last one?
Will Golston.
Will Golston.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, Will's a guy who needs to get more consistent. You see the flashes. You see him making plays. And then other times he goes away and you look at the stats at the end of the game and you say, well, he didn't have a tackle, or he had one tackle. It's that consistency with him, and I think another year in college would help him get there. He has all the physical tools. I mean, I'm sure NFL scouts would just drool over, you know, the rap sheet of his size and ability. So I guess if you're asking me, I think one of those guys is definitely ready to play. Two, yeah, and then Denard I don't think is ready yet.
Yeah, and the thing about Will Golston coming off the bowl game win over Georgia, I think we all considered it fait accompli that he was off after this year to the NFL. I think that hasn't been the case with his performance this year without a question. And the thing with Le'Veon Bell that I think a lot of scouts are going to notice and talk about is his inability to have that second-level speed.
Yep.
You know, once he gets into the secondary, he's got to start juking and jiving rather than just blowing guys away, which Edwin Baker had. So.
Exactly.
You know, those couple things, I think that's actually a really good assessment that Sims is ready, Golston and Bell are maybe, maybe not, kind of iffy. And and Denard, I mean, everybody needs cornerbacks. That's the only thing. That's the only thing that, that could really make him very, very attractive to teams. So.
Well, and that's the thing. You know, I think a lot of people looked at Edwin Baker last year and said, well, there's no way he's going to go. Yeah. You know, he's just not ready. And we can sit here and say, well, you're not ready and you're not. But the kid's situation is different and everybody's situation is different. So, I mean, I expect probably those four to fully take a look at, you know, what could be for them at the next level. And it probably won't be very easy decisions.
Yes. Now, what about, I know we mentioned the offense, but what happens with the offensive team? Because, you know, they just came up short on so many levels. What's going on with the offense? What happens? I mean, you know, it'd be a play here, a play there, mm-hmm. but it was always something missing in the offense.
Well, again, I think we need more than an hour because you can't pinpoint one thing. I mean, you know, Chris talked about the offensive line and how integral that is. And when you are moving guys in and out as much as they were the first four games of the season, it's tough to get much continuity there. And that affects your running game and your passing game. So it kind of starts there. You know, the running game has been pretty effective. Early on, the receivers were not very good. They've been much better later in the season. And, you know, I was talking with a colleague about this earlier about Andrew Maxwell. And although he's a junior and he's, you know, been in the system for, 4 years, he is still a freshman because he really hasn't played. Yeah. And when you have a guy like Kirk Cousins who played for 3 years and took, 98-99% of the snaps, you cannot replicate the experience that you get in a game. So he hasn't played, I don't think, as well as he would like, and I just think a lot of that has to do with experience.
The interesting thing about Maxwell to me, I wonder how many of those drops affected his confidence level, because his play was very strong in the early going. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he was putting, I mean, he had three interceptions, and two of them bounced off guys' hands in the first few games. Right. I mean, that was, he was hitting guys in stride, they weren't catching it. I wonder if that affected him because, you know, now down the stretch, he's missing them more, he's underthrowing guys a little bit more. And to me, that's a sign of maybe not necessarily losing confidence, but wavering confidence, which I think you could probably see with a first-year starter no matter what. I think that he comes back next year a much healthier and much happier quarterback because guys are catching passes now. And I think that, you know, getting a bowl game is so essential for this team and these players just to get another month of practice together in a setting that they can use and build off of in terms of cohesion and consistency. Because I think that, you know, the thing that the team from 2009 after the Rather Hall situation happened, they had that month of insulation where they had to battle the adversity of that with a number of guys suspended and practice for that. I think it was the Alamo Bowl.
So what?
And, you know, that's, I think people don't necessarily count how much that fostered and built the team chemistry for the next 2 years. It really did. So, I mean, it's essential for this group to get a bowl game and get that under their belts. And I think that'll happen. And, you know, when you talk about inconsistencies are going to eventually become consistencies with repetition. I do believe that. And I think that's one thing that I've seen, at least out of this offense, is that it's been there or close to there at times. And when you can take that to the next level without having much attrition, which it seems like with Fofanodi coming back now next year and you get a healthy Travis Jackson back, I think that there won't be as much attrition as there may have been. So it'll be interesting to see, I think, come fall camp, just where the mentality of this team is. But I think that they will be – they're primed again to have that return to success. Let's put it that way.
If Maxwell were the quarterback of the 2011 team where he had that talent around him, I think we'd be talking about him as an all-Big Ten quarterback. I mean, I really do. The talent is there. We've seen that. Chris mentioned his decision making. The amount of interceptions that he's thrown this year has been excellent. He's really made a lot of good decisions, hasn't tried to force passes in there, and that's frankly something we saw Kirk Cousins do. He had a little bit more of that gunslinger mentality. Yeah. You know, he brought a little Brett Favre swagger with him that he would try and force that ball in there. And
that's interesting, too, that Maxwell has a bigger arm, too.
Yeah, he does. Mm-hmm. He does. But he's played smarter sometimes. I think he just knows the situations and he takes risks when they're there, but he usually takes a pretty calculated risk. So I mean, I like his play moving forward, and I know people have been, you know, critical of his play, of Dan Roshar calling the plays and all that going forward, but it, you know, again, you're talking about a guy who hasn't had significant snaps in a game before this year. And when you take all that into consideration with what's happened around him on the offense, I don't think he's had a bad year at all.
And with his receivers as well, I mean, you see those routes run short of the sticks. And I know it drives fans nuts, and I'm sure it drives coaches even more nuts. But that's another situation with experience, because those guys have shown that they can make some downfield plays now. And you know, deep into the season here, they've shown the ability to go up and make catches in traffic and things that weren't there in the early going that they've corrected, and they've shown some abilities there. I think next year you come back and those, you know, 5-yard routes when you need 7, all of a sudden you're turning into 8 or 9 yards.
One thing that has been puzzled me this year, and it shouldn't have puzzled me, but I don't want to seem like I'm picking on a guy, but what's going on with Dan Conroy? I mean, he's missed a field goal each and every game, and a lot of those field goals, they would have led to wins. And it's unfortunate that he just had one miss, but unfortunately, is that a problem, or was that a problem?
It has been a problem.
Yeah.
Absolutely, it has been a problem. And what's been so surprising is that he'd been so steady in his career up to this point. And again, that's that consistency word that we touched on earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, Mark D'Antonio has the utmost confidence in him. His timing looks good. It doesn't look like he's dealing with an injury that we know about. The reason for his struggles, I don't have a good answer for you. I wish I did.
I'm a special teams aficionado, and I don't have an answer either. I mean, it literally is just like once a game, outer space shows up, and I'm looking up skyward, and oh, hello, and kick goes wide right. I mean, it's baffling because he's making his longer kicks over, I think, like 36, 37 yards, but where he's struggling is in between about 28 to 35. And, that, you know, that's where usually it's not that way. Usually you're seeing guys miss longer kicks. So, I mean, to me, I think it's a concentration thing. You know, maybe it's the snap. Maybe it's the hold. But I think that, to me, I think concentration is a big part of it.
Yeah, I wish I had a better answer for you, Earl. Maybe we need to get Dan on here and he can tell us. I mean, and he's talked a little bit about it. I mean, he's talked about, you know, some of his struggles. And, you know, that's, to me, that's one of the tougher positions on a football team. I mean, a lot of it, like Chris said, is mental. And you start missing a couple kicks here and there, and your confidence has got to waver a little bit.
Yeah, no one wants to talk to you when you're making those 28 to 35 yarders. They only want to talk to you when you hit a game winner or missing.
Yeah.
And that's been tough for them. Well, let's hopefully that we be much better next year. I mean, that's the only thing I guess we can say. Hope. I mean, this year is almost over with, but let's hope that Michigan State football team, and they're going to have so much more competition now in the Big Ten, especially with Notre Dame, you know, facing them each year, and then with Urban Meyer and Brady Hoke, Michigan is getting better. They're all those teams are getting better, and I hope Michigan State's getting better. But that's the thing. It's hard to say right now. Will this be a better team than they were last year?
Well, I think you have to look at the program, and I think you have to look at the foundation that Mark D'Antonio has built here and say there very easily could have 8 or 9 wins this season.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the things that could have gone against them have. So you get a couple breaks this year that maybe you got in years past, and you're looking at another 9-10 win season. It hasn't happened. The foundation is there. For this program to bounce back and do it again next year, and I fully expect them to do so.
And conversely, this could be a 2-win season.
That's scary.
That's how razor thin the line is between success this season with a young team.
But I think that's what happens when you have an offense that doesn't score a lot of points or doesn't have a lot of those explosive plays and a defense that's so good. Your offense is not going to help you blow anybody out, but your defense is going to keep you in every game. Therefore, the games are all decided by a touchdown or less, and you need to make some kind of a play in the fourth quarter in order to win a game.
A return to balance is really what Michigan State needs. They need the balance in the passing and rushing game, and they need the balance of getting pressure and covering. I mean, that's... It seems trite to kind of say that, but I mean, it really is such a game of balance and inches. And I think we've heard that line so many times this year. Game of inches, a game of inches. Yeah. And if I never hear that, I want a game of a couple yards once in a while. I'll take that.
Even feet.
Yeah, really.
Well, let's turn our attention to basketball, guys. Michigan State, Tom Izzo, he's done a great job, as we know, over the years. But these last few years, he's been scheduled some very tough games at the beginning of the season. How do you think this helps or impacts the team?
Well, they went 0-2 last year and were a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. So, playing the kind of competition that he likes to play, I think can only help you. I don't see how it hurts you.
Yeah, and they rattled off about, 16 yeah. wins in yeah. a row after those two losses. Right. So. It's going to be interesting to see how this team recovers from the early games this season, because physically there's a lot of recovery mm-hmm. that goes on with that. And if this team can remain healthy, I still think that there's enough talent, probably as much talent as Izzo's had in the 2000s. And that's saying something, because there's been some really, really deep and good teams. But when you've got guys like Gary Harris or even a guy like Travis Trice coming off the bench, I mean, that's a luxury to have. A guy like Denzel Valentine coming off the bench. It really helps when you can have the ability to shift parts around and, if you need to, shift lines around.
Well, it's funny because, you'd be going through the grocery store and somebody will stop you and say, "Hey, what do you think Michigan State's going to do this year in basketball?" And I said, "Well, I think they're going to have a better team this year than they did last year." And they look at you like, "Well, they just lost Draymond Green. What, have you been hit in the head by a coconut?" No. I mean, if you look at the talent on this year's team, they have the potential to have a better season this year because of their depth and their amount of talent than they did last year. Green was a tremendous player. And my sense is someday he will have his name hanging from the rafters in the Breslin Center.
Unquestionably.
And you can't replace those guys. And what bothered me most about this first game that they lost in Germany was the first possession. They got the tip, and Keith Appling dribbled the ball for about 15 seconds, and the other four offensive players looked like they didn't have a clue as to what play they were running, where they were going. We all know Tom Izzo scripts his first 10 to 15 plays. It's not a mystery. It's not like Connecticut all of a sudden came out in a zone and, "Oh, we have to switch to our zone offense." I mean, they literally looked like they lacked focus as to what was going on in that first possession. That concerns me, because if you're coming out of the chute the first game and the first play of the game and we don't look like we know what's going on, that's a red flag for me.
Standing at attention on the basketball court does not pay tribute to the military. That is absolute truth right there. I think that you miss Draymond Green, the player, but more importantly, you miss Draymond Green, the leader, because he is such a coordinator, almost like a symphony conductor, in getting the different parts of the orchestra to play their part. And that's going to take some time to fix and find the guy to be that way, because you'd expect a guy like Nix or maybe Appling to be those guys. Appling's the guy that needs to be that guy. Nix maybe tries a little bit too hard to be that guy, like he has to replace Draymond, which he needs to play his role. And Izzo's talked about, do your job. And he's talked about it ad nauseum with those players in practice and to us in the media, that they need to do their jobs and understand their roles and responsibilities. But Keith Appling needs to be the guy. He needs to be the point guard. I mean, he needs to show that he can be the guy to get everybody where they need to, instead of just dribbling out there for 15 seconds while everybody waits. Okay, where do you want us to go?
Well, and maybe that's where the problem stems on that possession, from him not communicating. But you would think on that first play that it is scripted, and everybody knew that if Connecticut came out man-to-man, here's the play we're going to run, that you know, I agree. He needs to be the floor general out there. And you're right. You're not going to be able to replace Draymond Green, the leader in the locker room. Somebody else is going to step up and do that. But who's going to grab the guys on the floor? Who's going to be that coach in the huddle? Because Tom loves that. Tom loves it when somebody runs his huddles in the timeouts and he doesn't have to. Who's going to do that this year? You know, you mentioned Knicks, and Knicks has the voice to do it. The point guard seems like the likely guy to do it, but sometimes Appling, I think, is afraid of his own voice, and that's why he wasn't voted a captain. So who does it now? And I think more than anything else, that will be an interesting thing to watch during the season, is where that leadership comes from as the season moves on.
That is a great, great line about Keith Appling being afraid of his own voice. And they just wanted him to be more commanding, be more demanding of everybody else around him. And I think some accountability needs to start with Keith as well. I mean, he struggled to shoot the ball last season considerably. And when you've been used to putting up 25, 30, 40, however many points a game he was in high school, when you hit that first struggle where it's not coming as easily to you, how you respond is so critical, especially to those around you that are looking for you for guidance.
Well, I liked the look of Brandon Dawson in that first game. I liked the look. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the ACL injury and then coming back. And really, I think he needs to be checked for his Superman cape because,
no doubt.
And Tom talked about how people in the NBA called him after that first game and said, wait a minute, this guy just came off ACL surgery. In his first game back, he played 34 minutes. Really? Who is this guy? I mean, his recovery from this is unbelievable. And I like, though, that he stepped up, and I saw him as being a vocal guy on the floor later in that first game, being a guy who was trying to really get the guys in line. And maybe it's him. You know, maybe he's the guy who steps up to do it. I think some of it has to fall on Appling, but it wouldn't help if, you know, there was more than one chief.
No, I'd agree with that. 100%. Dawson's got the capability physically to do it. Whether he can be the leader as a sophomore, especially one who missed some time last year, that's a to-be-determined kind of situation that we'll see as the season goes along. And, I mean, another guy that I really like is Gary Harris because he's an aggressive, in-your-face kind of player. So I think that, again, as he gets experience and builds upon that, maybe he's the guy.
Yep. And could we be seeing a battle or at least a little bit of a controversy for Coach Izzo when Travis Trice comes around? He played very well in the first game, and now he's hurt. When he comes back, will that be some concern of putting him at the point guard and shifting Keith Appling to the shooting guard? But as you know, Appling, if he's going to play at the next level, he's got to be a point guard. He can't be a shooting guard at the next level.
Well, and that's just it. Right now with him, you're kind of putting a square peg in a round hole. I mean, I think a lot of times you look at the offense and it runs better when Trice is out there running it. But Appling has to play some point. Tom has to play him there to showcase him to play at the next level. Because if he just plays him strictly at the two, you know, that's going to hurt where he may go at some point for the next level. So you're in a little bit of a bind there, but I don't see it so much as a controversy, Earl. I think it'll be interesting as the year goes on to see the distribution of minutes between those two guys playing the point and also Denzel Valentine, because, you know, locally we've had a chance to see him here in high school over the last 4 years and know for a big fella what he can do with the basketball in his hands.
Yeah, point guard, almost a point four as they say. When it comes to Travis Trice, I think that both his defense and his ability to guide and direct the offense are his strong points. I don't think there's any question about that. But you have to ask yourself, what happens to the lineup if you do that? If you push Trice into the one and then slide Appling over to the two, then all of a sudden you've got Gary Harris, a natural two, moving out to a three. Dawson probably going to a four, which is probably a little closer to his natural position, and Knicks or Payne as a five. I think Tom is going to experiment for a little while, at least in terms of getting an idea of what that best first five will be. Maybe not necessarily the combinations throughout the game, but that first five, that energy. Cause, I mean, you saw that against Connecticut. Is the early going was as rocky as I can remember.
Absolutely.
And that's something that he's going to need to correct, and it's going to take time and experience with some of these new guys and young guys and moving guys like Dawson into different roles that they didn't have last year. I think it's going to probably take them maybe through most of December to kind of find that and find the energy level that he likes, which means we're going to hear a lot of Tom Izzo complaining about things. And it's amazing. That happens all the time from November to probably January 1st. And then by that point, things seem to iron themselves out.
Well, he's big on a rotation. He's big on, you know, having a substitution pattern and having there be no surprises in that. He's just a creature of habit that way in getting that starting five, but knowing that starting five may not always be the finishing five, but at least it gets you into a rotation, a substitution pattern, and he likes to keep that from game to game the same as much as possible.
I love that he's been showing these guys clips of guys like Morris Peterson and some of the older players because, I mean, Peterson is...
That makes me feel old, by the way.
And me both.
When you call him an older player.
Well, it's funny because I remember in Tom's first recruiting class, Morris was one of those guys, and he said, you know, this might be the steal of this class for us. That was 1995.
I know.
So, I mean, but I think it's good because you look at Peterson's history within this program, and it's kind of defined what Tom wants. He's a guy that basically could have been an All-American by the time he was a senior, and he was comfortable and content coming off the bench because he knew end of that game, whether it's against Texas Arlington in November or at the end of the game against Syracuse at the Palace of Auburn Hills, he's getting the ball, and he's going to be on the court in crunch time. And I think that Izzo has shown guys it doesn't matter if you're getting starting roles. It matters if I trust you for situations when we need something. And these guys are all learning that, I think. And it's, you know, people have said it's a young team. Some people have said, well, it's not really that young because you've got Nix and you got Payne and Appling and they're juniors and seniors. But the other guys haven't been in that pressure cooker of the Izzo environment and getting into those games in those crunch time situations. So you need to kind of see who can rise above the fire. And he'll find that out. He'll find that out by the start of the Big Ten season.
One area that we haven't really mentioned very much, but I know you know, Jeremy, over the years that we've been around here, the big men have not been that productive. You know, they've been okay, but we really haven't produced. And I get this question. I just tell people all the time, I say, well, we just, you know, we just haven't been able to get one. Just that unlucky. But is it just a matter of fact they can't get the really good big man or get somebody even under the radar, a decent big man?
Well, the only thing I would say is I think they've had some good big men. What they haven't had is a dominant big man in the middle that's going to change a game offensively and defensively. That's one thing that they haven't had. I love Derek Nix's post game. He's got such athletic feet for a big man and great post moves. Adrian Payne, to me, is more of a defensive specialist where he's in there blocking shots, changing shots. His offensive game still, I think, has a lot of work to do. And he wasn't very good defensively in that Connecticut game. And, you know, I'm sure Adrian's getting the message that if you're not good defensively, you're not good on the floor, and you're going to be spending some time sitting on the bench. So I think he's going to realize that. You know, with those two guys in there, I think we'll see them some together. I think we'll see them some separated. They played better. The team played better when they were not in there together, and I think that's something that we're going to have to see as the season goes on, as to if that is a trend, and then if that is, you know, what's going to happen to the rotation if they're not in there together.
I did a story for our special basketball section about Nix and Payne playing together. And in doing that, I went back and looked through kind of the history of those big man tandems that Michigan State's had. I mean, going back even into the 60s, there really haven't been a lot of them. There have not been a lot of duos, classic kind of, you know, 1-2 punch at the 4 and 5 spot. I mean, you had the one Final Four team, you had Andre Hudson and you had Zach Randolph, but Randolph was coming off the bench in that situation. And I mean, that's probably the best power forward and center combinations that Izzo's had since he's been here. I mean, Paul Davis didn't really have a guy next to him to kind of play that four role the way they you would historically and typically like. And even back in, I mean, you looked at, you know, his first few years, he had Jamie Fike and Quentin Brooks and Damon Bethea. I mean, the knock is, and the, I shouldn't say the knock, the label has been out there for Michigan State for years that it's a guard school. Even back to Judd. Judd had the ability to get the most out of guards. And he loved to coach guards. Guys like Skiles, he loved that. Sam Vincent loved those kind of guys. But even you look at a guy like Kevin Willis under Judd, he didn't have the success that that Kevin Willis had for 20 years in the NBA.
It's true. Very true.
And, I mean, that's a seven-footer. You know, so, I mean, does that affect what Izzo does? Is it can Izzo not coach big men? I mean, you hear people say that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it has anything to do with him. It's the ability to get those big men. That's why the Jabari Parker situation is so interesting to me. He's 6'7", but he is a dominant inside force. And if you can get that dominant inside force, which I'm not really sure. I mean, even Jason Richardson was more of a slasher than an inside presence. So I think that's something that in the future, let's say they get Parker – maybe this changes. Maybe that changes the label a little bit.
Well, if they do get Parker, he's going to change a lot of things because of his talent level. The other thing that helps Michigan State in that respect is they're such a good rebounding team, positions 1 through 5,
yes,
that you don't need to rely on one guy who's just going in there and you know, pulling down 15 rebounds a game. Everybody rebounds on this team. So you can get away without a dominant big man rebounding. And then they found a way to work. You know, a lot of Izzo's big men have been able to shoot the ball. So their function in the offense has to do with some post moves, but he also pulls them out away from the basket. And that helps, you know, offensively when you can get other guys to the basket. Now when the big man's not standing underneath there. And so you've seen just a different kind of big man than maybe you have in a lot of other big programs. You don't have that.
Yeah, those pick-and-pop bigs like, you know, Goran Sutton or A.J. Granger is another one that comes to mind. Paul Davis was kind of that way as well.
A little bit.
And, you know, I mean, you see that with Alex Gauna this year, and maybe Matt Costello is going to be that kind of guy with maybe a little more interior presence. I mean, that's something that, you know, coming off that back injury and the bruise, I'm curious to see how he's going to respond because he could really make this rotation dynamic if he can if he can play up to the level that everybody thinks he can. I do because I think he can rebound the ball and score the ball from a number of different ways, which, you know, you mentioned about the rebounding. You can get 5 positions of rebounding, but what Michigan State has historically lacked is that interior scoring presence. And that, I mean, I don't think that Andre Hudson, to me, in Izzo's tenure, is the best and most consistent interior scoring presence, with Randolph only playing 1 year, but
right.
Randolph was like that as well. So I think if they can find that, Nix has that ability.
He does.
I mean, he's got, like you mentioned, the footwork and the soft hands to get shots and catch the ball in the paint and go up over defenders. That, to me, I think he's got that chance to be that special guy. And Payne does, too. But Payne needs to really apply that, whereas Nix really has that.
Well, what about the team's depth overall? I mean, the guys coming off the bench. Tom's been pretty good having guys just coming off the bench and contributing. It appears like this is going to be another team that he has pretty good depth coming off the bench, and he'll have a lot of quality players. But, you know, he's done that pretty successfully over the last, 7 or 8 years or so.
Yeah, and I would expect that to continue. You know, Trice and Kearney and Valentine are going to come off the bench. You know, Costello. I mean, these guys are going to have to contribute. And I see that happening, you know, without a problem. Tom, historically, has always used more players in the non-conference schedule. And then he finds a way, if he's using, you know, 9, 10 guys, to pare it back down to 7 or 8 once the conference season starts. And he gives players an opportunity to show what they can do, and he uses that non-conference schedule to kind of set his rotation for the Big Ten season, which is usually means another guy or two is not playing as much as they did in the non-conference.
Yeah, I think the guy to me that could be the most impactful bench player is Denzel Valentine, because he does fill so many different roles. He can distribute the ball on the break. He can run the wing. He can post up if you need him to against smaller guards. He can see the court really well with his vision and ability to pass the ball. I think to me he's the quintessential guy to get the offense a little spark off the bench, kind of like Peterson in a way. But as you said, Trice is critical off the bench or if he moves into the starting rotation. And Kearney to me is, you know, you talk about a guy being a defensive stopper. If he can add some offense to his game, he could see more minutes. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how and when he's healthy, if he can stay healthy, just what he's going to bring to this team. Because I think he can be kind of an X-factor kind of player.
I don't think depth will be a problem, Earl. I mean, I think there's plenty of guys on this roster. I don't see it becoming an issue where guys are, you know, worried about playing time or not getting, you know, a certain kind of minutes. Tom's going to give guys an opportunity to show what they can do, and then he's going to pare that roster down, that playing group down, in order for the Big Ten season.
Yes, I mean, he usually gets it down to the Big Ten season, usually around 7 or 8 players by that time. And that's the thing. He's going to have a lot of choosing to do. I mean, he's going to probably – sometimes he doesn't make guys upset, but this might be one of the times where he's going to have a lot of guys sitting on the bench unhappy.
Well, anytime you're not playing and you're a competitor, I hope you'd be unhappy. I mean, that's what you want. That's the kind of players you want in your program. The thing to me – to watch this year once we get into the Big Ten season is just how competitive the conference is going to be as a whole. I mean, when you look at where Michigan and Indiana are ranked, you know, to begin this season, Ohio State's, you know, still going to have a really good team. You know, where Michigan State's at. I'm interested, again, to watch the Big Ten kind of become the premier conference in college basketball, because that's how it's shaping up to be right now.
There are 8 or 9 teams in the Big Ten that are going to be competitive and fighting for an NCAA bid at the minimum, and possibly all conglomerated together fighting for a Big Ten title. I mean, this, you know, I heard John Beilein the other day saying that this could be a year where 12-6 might win it. And, you know, when you start thinking about that, how many 12-6 teams could there be? There could be a lot of them.
There could be.
And I mean, I think right now the depth of coaching in the league is as good as I can remember it. Maybe back into the 80s when Katie and Bob Knight and Judd and you know, Dr. Tom Davis and Lou Henson, those guys were in the conference. But it's so deep right now with the guys that you've got. I like what Beilein's doing at Michigan. He runs his program and he knows what he wants. Obviously, Thad Matta gets those high-level recruits at Ohio State. And the number of guys, even down to Bill Carmody at Northwestern. I mean, you know, another program guy that's been there for a while and had some success that Northwestern hadn't had for years. It's fun to watch Big Ten basketball, unlike watching Big Ten football this year. No question.
Well, I for one, am rooting for the Cats to get to the NCAA tournament. That's a streak in sports I would like to see end. And do they have a chance to do it this year? Yeah. I mean, in part because they're going to be playing in the best conference in the country, which is going to help their RPI. And I think it, you know, they went late into the season last year to see if they could get themselves into the conversation, and it didn't quite work out. But I expect them to be back in the conversation this year.
I'd agree with that. I mean, they've been so close the last few years where – you know, you want it to end. You're right.
Yeah, I mean,
you hate seeing those streaks of futility like that, no matter what sport it is. But I think that, you know, I mean, is this going to be a 3 or 4 team race? I don't know. I think I could see at least 3 teams, really, with Indiana and Crean and Cody Zeller. I see them still being the class. But I mean, Michigan State, Michigan, and Ohio State can all be right there at the end when it comes down to March and they head down to. Well, Chicago this year for the Big Ten tournament.
I think it is, which I don't like. I'd rather have it in Indy, but they didn't ask me. So
yeah, they didn't ask me either. And because I think the men are playing at the United Center, and the women are playing out at in, I think, maybe in Skokie. I don't know. Yeah. They're way out there.
Well, I want to thank you guys for both coming in. I want to thank you, Lansing State Journal reporter Chris Solari and WILX-TV reporter Jeremy Sampson. We want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And we have to remember that this program has been pre-recorded, so we want you to join us tomorrow. We'll have another pre-recorded program for you tomorrow. But thank you guys for coming in, and we want to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Earl. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to both of you guys.
And you're listening to radio station WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.